Chapter 116. Give a dog a bad name, an anim, fascination Fletcherby, left alone in the counting house, strolled about with his hat on one side, whistling, and investigating the drawers, and prying here and there for any small evidences of his being cheated, but could find none. Not his merit, that he don't cheat me, apostrophe was Mr. Fletcherby's commentary delivered with a wink, but my precaution. Apostrophe he then with a lazy grandeur asserted his rights as Lord of Pupsy and Company, by poking his cane at the stools and boxes, and spitting in the fireplace, and so loitered royally to the window, and looked out into the narrow street, with his small eyes just peering over the top of Pupsy and Company's blind. As a blind in more senses than one, it reminded him that he was alone in the counting house with the front door open. He was moving away to shut it, lest he should be injudiciously identified with the establishment, when he was stopped by someone coming to the door. This someone was the doll's dressmaker, with a little basket on her arm, and her crutch stick in her hand. Her keen eyes had espied Mr. Fletcherby before Mr. Fletcherby had espied her, and he was paralyzed in his purpose of shutting her out, not so much by her approaching the door, as by her favoring him with a shower of nods, the instant he saw her. This advantage he improved, by hobbling up the steps with such dispatch, that before Mr. Fletcherby could take measures for her finding nobody at home, she was face to face with him in the counting house. Hope I see you well, sir, apostrophe said Miss Wren. Mr. Raya in? Apostrophe, Fletcherby had dropped into a chair, in the attitude of one waiting wearily. I suppose he will be back soon, apostrophe he replied. He has cut out, and left me expecting him back, in an odd way. Haven't I seen you before? Apostrophe, once before, if you had your eyesight, apostrophe replied Miss Wren. The conditional clause in an undertone. When you were carrying on some games up at the top of the house. I remember. How's your friend? Apostrophe, I have more friends than one, sir, I hope, apostrophe replied Miss Wren. Which friend? Apostrophe, never mind, apostrophe said Mr. Fletcherby, shutting up one eye, any of your friends, all your friends. Are they pretty tolerable? Apostrophe, somewhat confounded, Miss Wren parried the pleasantry, and sat down in a corner behind the door, with her basket in her lap. By and by, she said, breaking a long and patient silence. I beg your pardon, sir, but I am used to find Mr. Raya at this time, and so I generally come at this time. I only want to buy my poor little 2 shillings worth of waste. Perhaps you'll kindly let me have it, and I'll trot off to my work. Apostrophe, I let you have it? Apostrophe, said Fletcherby, turning his head towards her, for he had been sitting blinking at the light, and feeling his cheek. Why, you don't really suppose that I have anything to do with the place, or the business, do you? Apostrophe, suppose? Apostrophe, exclaimed Miss Wren. He said, that day, you were the master. Apostrophe, the old cock in black said? Raya said? Why, he'd say anything. Apostrophe, well, but you said so too, apostrophe returned Miss Wren. Or at least you took on like the master, and didn't contradict him. Apostrophe, one of his dodges, apostrophe said Mr. Fletcherby, with a cool and contemptuous shrug. He's made of dodges. He said to me, come up to the top of the house, sir, and I'll show you a handsome girl. But I shall call you the master. So I went up to the top of the house, and he showed me the handsome girl, very well worth looking at she was, and I was called the master. I don't know why. I dare say he don't. He loves a dodge for its own sake. Being, apostrophe added Mr. Fletcherby, after casting about for an expressive phrase, the dodgerest of all the dodgers. Apostrophe, oh my head. Apostrophe, cried the doll's dressmaker, holding it with both her hands, as if it were cracking. You can't mean what you say. Apostrophe, I can, my little woman, retorted Fletcherby, and I do, I assure you. This repudiation was not only an act of deliberate policy on Fletcherby's part, in case of his being surprised by any other caller, but was also a retort upon Miss Wren for her over-sharpness, and a pleasant instance of his humor as regarded the old Jew. He has got a bad name as an old Jew, and he is paid for the use of it, and I'll have my money's worth out of him. Apostrophe. This was Fletcherby's habitual reflection in the way of business, and it was sharpened just now by the old man's presuming to have a secret from him. Though of the secret itself, as annoying somebody else whom he disliked, he by no means disapproved. Miss Wren, with a fallen countenance, sat behind the door looking thoughtfully at the ground, and the long and patient silence had again set in for some time, when the expression of Mr. Fletcherby's face betokened that through the upper portion of the door, which was of glass, he saw someone faltering on the brink of the counting house. Presently there was a rustle and a tap, and then some more rustling and another tap. Fletcherby taking no notice, the door was at length softly opened, and the bright face of a mild little elderly gentleman looked in. Mr. Raya? Said this visitor, very politely. I am waiting for him, sir, returned Mr. Fletcherby. He went out, and left me here. I expect him back every minute. Perhaps you had better take a chair. The gentleman took a chair, and put his hand to his forehead, as if he were in a melancholy frame of mind. Mr. Fletcherby eyed him aside, and seemed to relish his attitude. A fine day, sir, remarked Fletcherby. The little dried gentleman was so occupied with his own depressed reflections, that he did not notice the remark until the sound of Mr. Fletcherby's voice had died out of the counting house. Then he started, and said, I beg your pardon, sir. I fear you spoke to me? Remarked Fletcherby, a little louder than before, it was a fine day. Yes. Again the little dried gentleman put his hand to his forehead, and again Mr. Fletcherby seemed to enjoy his doing it. When the gentleman changed his attitude with a sigh, Fletcherby spake with a grin. Mr. Twemlow, I think? The dried gentleman seemed much surprised. Had the pleasure of dining with you at Lammel's, said Fletcherby. Even have the honor of being a connection of yours. An unexpected sort of place this to meet in. But one never knows, when one gets into the city, what people one may knock up against. I hope you have your health, and are enjoying yourself. There might have been a touch of impertinence in the last words. On the other hand, it might have been but the native grace of Mr. Fletcherby's manner. Mr. Fletcherby sat on a stool with a foot on the rail of another stool, and his hat on. Mr. Twemlow had uncovered on looking in at the door, and remained so. Now the conscientious Twemlow, knowing what he had done to thwart the gracious Fletcherby, was particularly disconcerted by this encounter. He was as ill at ease as a gentleman well could be. He felt himself bound to conduct himself stiffly towards Fletcherby, and he made him a distant bow. Fletcherby made his small eyes smaller in taking special note of his manner. The doll's dressmaker sat in her corner behind the door, with her eyes on the ground and her hands folded on her basket, holding her crutch stick between them, and appearing to take no heed of anything. He's a long time, muttered Mr. Fletcherby, looking at his watch. What time may you make it, Mr. Twemlow? Mr. Twemlow made it 12:10, sir. As near as a toucher, assented Fletcherby. I hope, Mr. Twemlow, your business here may be of a more agreeable character than mine. Thank you, sir, said Mr. Twemlow. Fletcherby again made his small eyes smaller, as he glanced with great complacency at Twemlow, who was timorously tapping the table with a folded letter. What I know of Mr. Raya, said Fletcherby, with a very disparaging utterance of his name, leads me to believe that this is about the shop for disagreeable business. I have always found him the bitten just and tightest screw in London. Apostrophe, Mr. Twemlow acknowledged the remark with a little distant bow. It evidently made him nervous. So much so, apostrophe pursued Fledgeby, that if it wasn't to be true to a friend, nobody should catch me waiting here a single minute. But if you have friends in adversity, stand by them. That's what I say, and act up to. Apostrophe, the equitable Twemlow felt that this sentiment, irrespective of the utterer, demanded his cordial assent. You are very right, sir, apostrophe he rejoined with spirit. You indicate the generous and manly course. Glad to have your approbation, apostrophe returned Fledgeby. It's a coincidence, Mr. Twemlow, apostrophe here he descended from his perch, and sauntered towards him, that the friends I am standing by today are the friends at whose house I met you. The Lammels. She's a very taking and agreeable woman. Apostrophe, apostrophe, conscience smote the gentle Twemlow pale. Yes, apostrophe, he said. She is. Apostrophe, and when she appealed to me this morning, to come and try what I could do to pacify their creditor, this Mr. Raya, that I certainly have gained some little influence within transacting business for another friend, but nothing like, so much as she supposes, and when a woman like that spoke to me as her dearest Mr. Fledgeby, and shed tears, why what could I do, you know? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Twemlow gasped, nothing but come. Apostrophe, nothing but come. And so I came. But why, apostrophe said Fledgeby, putting his hands in his pockets and counterfeiting deep meditation, why Raya should have started up when I told him that the Lammels entreated him to hold over a bill of sale he has on all their effects, and why he should have cut out, saying he would be back directly, and why he should have left me here alone so long, I cannot understand. Apostrophe, the chivalrous Twemlow, knight of the simple heart, was not in a condition to offer any suggestion. He was too penitent, too remorseful. For the first time in his life he had done an underhanded action, and he had done wrong. He had secretly interposed against this confiding young man, for no better real reason than because the young man's ways were not his ways. But, the confiding young man proceeded to heap coals of fire on his sensitive head. I beg your pardon, Mr. Twemlow. You see I am acquainted with the nature of the affairs that are transacted here. Is there anything I can do for you here? You have always been brought up as a gentleman, and never as a man of business. Apostrophe, another touch of possible impertinence in this place. And perhaps you are but a poor man of business. What else is to be expected? Apostrophe, I am even a poorer man of business than I am a man, sir, apostrophe returned Twemlow, and I could hardly express my deficiency in a stronger way. I really do, not so much as clearly understand my position in the matter on which I am brought here. But there are reasons which make me very delicate of accepting your assistance. I am greatly, greatly, disinclined to profit by it. I don't deserve it. Apostrophe, good childish creature. Condemned to a passage through the world by such narrow little dimly lighted ways, and picking up so few specks or spots on the road. Perhaps, apostrophe said Fledgeby, you may be a little proud of entering on the topic, having been brought up as a gentleman. Apostrophe, it's not that, sir, apostrophe returned Twemlow, it's not that. I hope I distinguish between true pride and false pride. Apostrophe, I have no pride at all, myself, apostrophe said Fledgeby, and perhaps I don't cut things so fine as to know one from t'other. But I know this is a place where even a man of business needs his wits about him, and if mine can be of any use to you here, you're welcome to them. Apostrophe, you are very good, apostrophe said Twemlow, faltering. But I am most unwilling, apostrophe, I don't, you know, apostrophe proceeded Fledgeby with an ill-favored glance, entertain the vanity of supposing that my wits could be of any use to you in society, but they might be here. You cultivate society and society cultivates you, but Mr. Raya's not society. In society, Mr. Raya is kept dark. A. Mr. Twemlow? Apostrophe apostrophe, Twemlow, much disturbed, and with his hand fluttering about his forehead, replied. Quite true. Apostrophe, the confiding young man besought him to state his case. The innocent Twemlow, expecting Fledgeby to be astounded by what he should unfold, and not for an instant conceiving the possibility of its happening every day, but treating of it as a terrible phenomenon occurring in the course of ages, related how that he had had a deceased friend, a married civil officer with a family, who had wanted money for change of place on change of post, and how he, Twemlow, had given him his name, apostrophe with the usual, but in the eyes of Twemlow almost incredible result, that he had been left, to repay what he had never had. How, in the course of years, he had reduced the principal by trifling sums, having, apostrophe said Twemlow, always to observe great economy, being in the enjoyment of a fixed income limited in extent, and that depending on the munificence of a certain nobleman, apostrophe and had always pinched the full interest out of himself with punctual pinches. How he had come, in course of time, to look upon this one only debt of his life as a regular quarterly drawback, and no worse, when his name had some way fallen into the possession of Mr. Raya, who had sent him notice to redeem it, by paying up in full, in one plump sum, or take tremendous consequences. This, with hazy remembrances of how he had been carried to some office, to confess judgment as he recollected the phrase, and how he had been carried to another office, where his life was assured for somebody not wholly unconnected with the sherry trade whom he remembered by the remarkable circumstance, that he had a Stradivarius violin to dispose of, and also a Madonna, formed the sum and substance of Mr. Twemlow's narrative. Through which stalked the shadow of the awful Snigsworth, eyed afar off by money lenders as security in the mist, and menacing Twemlow with his baronial truncheon. To all, Mr. Fledgeby listened with the modest gravity becoming a confiding young man who knew it all beforehand, and, when it was finished, seriously shook his head. I don't like, Mr. Twemlow, apostrophe said Fledgeby, I don't like Raya's calling in the Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.